Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fine Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly, and joining us this week in the VIP tent is Lieutenant Tom O'Connor. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how's it going?
It's great. Thank you for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Trust me.
We're here to talk about episode 10 of season 8, The Yalu Brick Road. MASH loves a good pun. The original air date, November 19th, 1979. But of course, Tom, what's your MASH origin story?
It's kind of funny because a lot of your guests have had like very similar stories, like very similar like upbringings to MASH. But for me, I actually like despised the show when I was a kid. Like growing up, I hated it. Like just seeing Alan Alda's face, so I'd just be like, "Oh, that's so bored." But then, like, I was like a teenager, and my sister's just sitting there watching the DVDs, and I was supposed to go to my buddy's house after school, and I just ended up like sitting there watching like a quarter of a season with my sister. And then my buddy calls me and he's like, "Hey, where are you?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'm just sitting here watching MASH." And from then on, I just got like, you know, just head over heels for it.
Huh. So why do you think you had such a visceral reaction to it when you were younger? Was there something about it, or did it just look old and fussy? I mean, what was it that had made you be like, "No"?
Well, it is kind of weird because I liked stuff like the Three Stooges and all sorts of like older media, right? So okay. it's not like it was like too old for me or nothing, but maybe it's just because I just didn't get like the humor and all that, right? Like just kind of how it all tied in. Like being so young, I guess I just didn't get that. But once I got it, it was, you know, mind blowing.
How much older is your sister?
She's only 3 years older.
Okay, so not a huge difference. So that's interesting. Now, no. Do you remember what episode was that you first watched when you were kind of like, "Oh, this is all right. This I did kind of I made kind of laugh a little bit."
I don't remember the episode, but I know that she only had the first three seasons on DVD.
Okay.
Yeah. <All right. laughs> It definitely wasn't Dreams.
No, well, so, and she was not trying to get you to watch it, right? She was just watching it, and you chose, which is, of course, that's the way to find something. If you don't want somebody, you know, a lot of times if you don't like something, somebody trying to make you watch it, you're going to like it even less because you're feeling like, "Oh, stop making me do it." So what do you remember? What just seemed different to you at that age?
I don't know. It's just maybe just the fact that I could get the humor and the sexual innuendo. Like I couldn't believe the sexual innuendo, but I also couldn't believe like some of Hawkeye's like anti-war rants and stuff. Like mm-hmm. I found it to be kind of like unbelievable for its time or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I just kind of got it, right? You know, it's just one of those things.
Now, did you go on that journey with your sister, like discovering it, or did you get, you went on your own and just started watching it by yourself?
Yeah, I went on my own, and the same buddy that I was, he ended up coming over. He ended up getting into it. I got all my buddies into it, and then I ended up getting all the other DVDs and buying the first three off of her, by, like just taking them. So, like, I just got into it hard. Like when I get into something, I just go, you know. It's all or nothing.
So obviously your fandom has continued on because you're here and like, nobody can see this, but like your avatar is a t-shirt of the signpost. So obviously you lapped your sister in terms of, you know, you were like, "No, never." And now you're like a huge fan. Did she kind of continue on with it, or did she kind of, it was just a TV show that she watched and she just went on with her life?
No, she does like it still. And my other sister, you know, she would just always talk like praise it and whatnot. But
okay,
it's funny. My sister even had a t-shirt that I ended up stealing off her. It was a MASH t-shirt.
Yeah. I'm like, you're taking a lot of stuff from your sister.
Just like, "Oh, I like it. I'm taking it."
Wow. Okay.
So that's the thing though, like I always try to like tell people like you want to get a show like to get into, like you got to watch MASH, trust me, just you got to do it, like you'll thank me later.
I love it. I
And
love that you're such a converter now, right? You
exactly, but the thing is I can be an advocate for it because I used to hate it so much. So like nobody can say that like I didn't see it from that other side of the fence, you know what I mean? Like I'm the perfect advocate to say like you got to give it a try because you will like it, you know?
Oh, yeah, there's that. I don't, I'm going to butcher the phrase, but it's like there's nobody more devout than the recent convert or something. Like there's nobody who's more anti-cigarette smoke than people that used to smoke and now they don't, you know, that kind of thing. So
Exactly.
yeah, now you're like totally, oh my God, I got to watch this. So as you started to watch it, like, when you watch them now, is there a particular era that you like a little? I don't even know why I'm fascinated by this, but I always am. Like, is there one era that's a little more your jam than others, or is it not really?
It is something that's like a captivating conversation, just particularly with MASH, because there is so many like different eras compared to different sh other shows don't really have that. They just kind of have their cast and that's it. But no, I'm definitely like later season. Like I do like the comedy, but I just think like to do a war show, you can't just be having fun all the time. Like there's going to be a lot more of those gruesome kind of things that are going on that are dragging you down. But I do prefer the later seasons because as I go through it more and more, I kind of find that I think Winchester is my favorite character, but I'm totally like a Hawkeye guy, but like my top five favorite scenes are all Winchester scenes. So it's just
Interesting.
yeah.
I think I mentioned this on the show once before. In fact, I'm sure I did, where, like, when I was wrapping up season five of the show, I got a bunch of emails from people who said, "Oh, I've been listening to the show for a bunch of years, but I never wanted to be on it until you're now in the Winchester years because he's my favorite character." And
Oh
I love that character, but I didn't realize there were that many people out there that would say, "No, he was my favorite." So you're in good company. There's a lot of people out there that really loved that character, and so therefore the second half of the show is a little more their favorite because of his presence. So okay, interesting.
yeah.
As I mentioned, we're here to talk about the Yellow Brick Road. It was written by Mike Farrell. Hey, I know that name.
Yep.
And directed by Charles S. Dubin. So the camp is suffering from a brutal case of salmonella, which they all picked up from some bad turkeys Klinger scored from a shifty supply sergeant. With Hawkeye, BJ, Margaret, and Winchester all the way for medical conferences and not yet back home, it's up to Potter and Father Mulcahy to try and take care of everyone. Meanwhile, we see what's taking Hawkeye and BJ so long to get home. BJ got them lost and can't find their way back to the main road. They get into an accident and crash the Jeep, forcing them to walk. While huffing it, they run into a North Korean soldier who is determined to surrender to them, despite Hawkeye and BJ's lack of interest in taking prisoners. Margaret and Winchester make it back to the 477th and help out with all the sick personnel. Winchester tries to worm his way out of helping, but Margaret threatens him if he takes one step outside. Back out in the hills, Hawkeye and BJ can't get rid of the North Korean, who they call Ralph, but he proves to be invaluable when he saves them from being imprisoned, or worse, by a group of passing armed to the teeth North Korean soldiers. He pretends they are his prisoners, which the others accept, and move on. After they're out of sight, Ralph surrenders again and gets a giant hug from both Hawkeye and BJ. They keep walking and come across an old man who has broken his ankle while moving a wooden cart down the road. He's so weak he can't walk at all, so BJ has to carry him on his back until they find his hut where his wife is. Luckily, the old man and his wife own a beat-up, rusty motorcycle, which BJ insists he can drive. He puts Hawkeye in the sidecar, and Ralph climbs on the back, and off they go, none too steadily, to the 477th. While Margaret, Winchester, Potter, and Mulcahy tend to the sick, Hawkeye and BJ return, accidentally running over Winchester's freshly cleaned sheets in the process. They head off to post op to help out, and they bring Ralph with them. There's a whole ward full of people you haven't surrendered to yet. All right, Tom, that is the Yellow Brick Road. A really fun episode, quite well written by Mike Farrell. I would say, by the way, this episode makes Mike Farrell the only the third actor from MASH to have written an episode by this point, after Alan Alda, of course, and McLean Stevenson. So before we get into the beat by beat of all of this, what's your overall feeling about this episode?
Oh, I just always loved how it's like a one of those light-hearted kind of episodes. you know, the thing that's funny is that there's like not a lot that really happens in it. It's kind of like, you know, the salmonella plot's kind of like a little fillerish, but it's got like a lot of great lines in it. And I just love the Ralph and Hawkeye and BJ dynamic. But it's just at any time Soon Tek O is in an episode, those are one of my it's one of my favorites, right? Like the Korean surgeon, the bus, this, like he's the best. Like I love that guy.
Yeah, he was always a dependable him and Richard Lee Sung, those two guys, they were on and Mako. Well, now I'm expanding it, but those three actors played rotating Chinese soldiers or Koreans or whatever, but they were always and they always were great in every episode that they appeared in. And Soon Tae Ko got to be other than like Richard Lee Sung, who was always funny. Soon Tae Ko got to be serious, got to be funny. You know, he got to do lots of different things. And this one's a very, very silly episode, but as you say, it is very, very funny. So, and as I mentioned, it's written by Mike Ferrell by himself, by the way. Now, and we know that, you know, staff writers punch up episodes and you never know how much of it is written. But nevertheless, Mike Ferrell gets sole credit for the teleplay, which is really, I think, you know, quite impressive because he's not a writer by, you know, by habit. Alan Alda got to be on the show for many, many years and started slowly working on the show. But Mike Ferrell came out with this one right out of the gate. I think it's really fun. It opens up with our introduction to Sergeant Rizzo, G.W. Bailey as Sergeant Rizzo, who, of course, is the replacement character for Zale, although they don't really mention that. Now, later on, he'll be in an episode, Captain's Outrageous, where it's sort of like he's playing Rizzo, but he isn't really. So I think they must have shot that one out of sequence with this one, and then they ran this one first. But this is his first formal introduction. They name him. He's got the slightly Louisiana accent, and so he gets a lot to do in this one, G.W. Bailey, and he's a fine addition to the cast. What are your feelings about about Rizzo versus Zale? Where do you fall on that?
I like Rizzo more. I feel like he, you can kind of do more with Rizzo. I feel like Zale was a little bit more one punch pony kind of thing. Like,
He's always just fighting with Klinger.
yeah, but I do love the mash fights where they just roll around in the dirt, like a grade seven fight or something.
He
But you
did
meant,
get more to do.
sorry.
G.W. Bailey did get more to do, certainly, in these later seasons. Like he got like some big chunks of episodes devoted to him. Not devoted to him, but he got more to do than Johnny Hamer ever did.
And he had more memorable moments, I would say.
And I so and they do set up, it's funny, at his early appearance here, they do sort of set up a similar dynamic that Zale had with Klinger, where they talk about the reason everybody is sick is because Klinger got low grade turkeys. And they talk about that Rizzo is like, I hope that I can get better just so I can kill Klinger. And so he's like already got his kind of sights set on Klinger. And I can imagine that if you're writing this character for the first time, you're naturally kind of maybe like, well, he's the new Zale, so it's the same dynamic, and that him and Klinger will square off, and then they clearly drop that at this point. I love it when Klinger walks in, and everyone is like booing him, and so they're like boo, they hate him and stuff. And I have to wonder, what does an army unit do? What does a medical unit do in this case if wounded arrive? And everybody is sick. What do they literally do?
Oh my God. Just to think, well, I guess it's that magic, like, second unit that you never see over, you know, the other shift.
I guess the other doctors we've never met, they're in some other tent that we don't know about and stuff like that. It's very interesting. So there is a great, very old school pun where Zale thinks he's dying and Potter says, no, you've got salmonella. And he goes, salmonella, who are they? And it's salmonella. And again, very old, very Abbott and Costello type joke. And they talk about that basically virtually everybody. We see the nurse, Jennifer, we see her in the background, and Potter and Mulcahy. And Mulcahy was away at the orphanage, so he didn't eat. But virtually everyone else is sick. And it makes me think, just from my own personal experience, are there no vegetarians at the 477? I'm guessing maybe there might, first of all, there weren't that many vegetarians in the 50s. I'm guessing If there were a few, they probably are lapsed while they're serving in Korea because the food is, there's little enough food to eat, let
Yeah, that's
alone
true.
not eating the protein part of it or something. So.
Yeah, that's true. I guess you can't really be full-fledged if you're in that kind of scenario, right?
I guess so. You know, I mean, it's all, you know, it's okay. I have to say, as just as a, I try and I generally keep my vegetarianism to myself because it's just, I don't know. There's no point in really talking about it a whole lot. Nobody really cares. But when there'll be some news story about, oh, there was some outbreak of E. coli at some beef manufacturer, and it's this brand has been pulled off the market. I have a slight smug kind of like, yeah, well, you know, I guess I don't have to worry about that kind of thing. I have to say, I'm a little like, but okay. everyone is sick at the 477 except for a few. So then we find Hawkeye and BJ, and we see that they're lost. And then BJ admits that they're lost. And Hawkeye calls him a nerd. He goes, "You nerd?" And I can't. I don't think I've ever heard anyone called that in that context. Nerd to me is always like, you're like a nerd about, you're a comic book nerd, you're a MASH nerd. But he's just calling it, using it as a general insult. I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. That went over my head, to be honest.
Yeah, you hear Hawkeye yell at me. He says, "You nerd!" And he's like, because he's telling BJ to get back, you know, like get back on the road. And then they almost crash into this other Jeep. There is a nice little bit of filmmaking where they crash the Jeep, and then there's like a big zoom out of Hawkeye and BJ landing in the dirt. That, you know, pretty well done, an effect for having to
Yeah, not
hide the
bad.
fact that they're actually crashing the Jeep.
Yeah, not bad for, what they had to do, right?
You know, I mean, again, it's not, they really didn't have the budget for that to do like an actual stunt. Although I will say I am impressed at the scene where Hawkeye and BJ are trying to right the Jeep, right? Because their Jeep is flipped over and it's on a slight incline, and they start rocking it and they realize it's going to start rolling the other way, and it actually falls top down. And that looks real because, and I'm like, is that a real Jeep? Because those are our actors. Those are We, the, you know, that's clearly Alan Alda and Mike Farrell. And I'm like, that's a little dangerous to put your stars in that. And it looks like a real Jeep, though, right? It looks really you.
Yeah, like it seems like a pretty dangerous stunt to pull, just, when, because like you said, you could tell it's clearly them. It's not like, a clear double or nothing.
Yeah, they're not, it's
But
not like a
that
pull-in
can
where you just.
easily go wrong.
Yeah, I'm like, maybe like they had it on some I don't know. I don't know. I mean, you don't see anything. It's not like they could put it on, you know, strings and then like take it out and, you know, digitally take it out. They couldn't do that back then. So I'm kind of impressed by that if that's a real actual working metal vehicle, like it does rock close enough to the two act. It's interesting. I'd love to know, like, how did actually they do that? Because you generally never put your stars in any sort of harm's way like that, ever for any
No.
reason. So yeah, pretty well done effect generally. So then we're back at the 477th, and poor Rizzo is being put back to bed by Mulcahy. And they mention, I should have mentioned this in the previous scene, they talk about the guy that Klinger got the bad turkeys from, and this is this guy named Thermopolis. Now, according to IMDb's trivia, which again you can't always trust, Anthony Dennis Tony Thermopolis was an ABC programming president when this segment was written. So Klinger's line, "If there's anyone who knows turkeys, it's Thermopolis," was a CBS in-joke made at the expense of their rival network.
Oh my God. That's crazy.
I don't know whether that is true or not, but I like it. I'll, you know, what the hell, there's no way to prove that it isn't. So I, you know, I can see the MASH writers sticking it to a rival network. That's kind of funny. One other thing I like about this is, you know, it's MASH episodes for the most part are kind of like self-contained, right? Like most of the events don't travel on to subsequent episodes. Once someone does something, it kind of just stays that way and that's it, you know, whatever. And they don't really do ongoing storylines on MASH. But one of the things I like about this is that Klinger is still getting a hang of the job, right? In Period of Adjustment, that whole episode is about him getting up to speed. And by the end of that episode, you know, he's clearly getting better at his job because people are supporting him. But I kind of like that this is just a couple episodes after that, and they're still kind of saying Klinger doesn't know quite all the ropes. He's getting turkeys from an untrustworthy, as Rizzo says, a crook you can trust. So it's very subtle, but it's like, you know what? Klinger is still making some, this is not a mistake that Radar would ever make. So I kind of like that they're still continuing that on.
Yeah, it's cool that it gives the character more arc to kind of have him struggle for a bit and twists in the wind a bit, right? Because then it just seems like it's like, oh, one day he's struggling and then the next episode he looks like Radar and he's overperforming everyone. And it's like, you know, people would complain about how ridiculous that is, right? So you need it to be like a slow climb, I would say.
Yeah.
In his arc.
Yeah. And TV shows generally, other than soap operas or dramas where that was built into the premise, sitcoms didn't really do that. Once something got resolved, it was resolved forever. But I kind of like that they, you know, this is not a mistake that season 9 Klinger is going to make, but in the middle of season 8, he still kind of is. And then he gets sick from the turkeys and he ends up getting a bed right next to Rizzo. And I love that when Rizzo goes, "Hey, everybody, Klinger's got it." And they're all like, "Yay."
Very unenthusiastic. No energy.
I love that. I think it's like
my favorite part of that is when Klinger is like, "Hey, Colonel, you should go lay down because you're looking kind of blurry."
Yeah. And then he like practically like throws the towels in the air or something and then, you know, hands them off to Mulcahy. That's a great bit. So then we're back with Hawkeye and BJ, and this is when they run into he's not yet named Ralph, but they will run into Ralph, as you mentioned, played by Soon Teko. This is his fourth MASH. He would come back and do a couple more, but again, incredibly versatile actor. May I ask, Tom, are you someone who gets lost easily? Because pathetically, I am.
No, actually, I actually got like terrific bearings where I always say that if you just like put me in a sack and drop me somewhere, I can tell you where North is.
I envy you. I don't know. I've never been great at it, but I'm getting worse and worse and worse. And I wonder if that's because ever since the smartphone, you hand that over to your phone, and like your muscle gets even more atrophied if you don't do it yourself. But like if I'm driving somewhere and I don't know where I'm going and I have to make a quick decision, a left or a right, I will invariably make the wrong one, no matter what it is. Whatever my instinct is, I go right. Then I should have gone left. It's ridiculous. And luckily for me, my wife is like you, unbelievably good at it. Like we can go to one location for 5 minutes and she will remember. And I'm like, "Wait, where did we park?" And she's like, "Oh yeah, here. She remembered. So thank God, because
you know what's funny is my wife isn't. So opposites attract, right?
There you go. It's really come in handy because I am monomaniacal about being late. I am never late for things. I would rather get somewhere a half hour early and sit in the parking lot like a doofus than get there late. And of course, if you get lost easily, you got to build that in. So I'm always like building so much extra time. But luckily, she's always manages to get us to the right place. So that's funny that you guys are just the opposite. When I was a kid, when I was a teenager, I would ask my dad for directions, how to get places, and he would like give me a way more complicated route to save 5 minutes. And I'm like, "Dad, don't know. Just give me what's the route with the shortest amount of roads, because then there's the least amount of chances I'm going to get lost." He's like, "But that's 5 miles out of your way." I'm like, "That's fine. Just give me the highways. Don't give me the back roads." And that's something that's, they always talk about that on MASH of like, "Let's take the shortcut. Let's take a back road." You guys are in a war zone. Don't do that. Don't take unsecured roads. Like, stick to the main drags where you might not get shot.
Like you're not even in the same country that you're familiar with. Like, come on, man. Like, what are we doing?
So anyway, Hawkeye and Klinger, they find Ralph and they immediately think, okay, they want to, they're like, they're just kind of, all right, dude. And they want to walk away. And then he keeps following them. And then we're back at the 477th and Winchester and Margaret arrive and Margaret says, she notices, well, they both know. He says, Colonel, you look awful. What's wrong? And Potter has this great line. He says, I'm glad you
Oh, yeah.
noticed. I'd hate to feel rotten and have it be my little secret, which is
That's something I say in real, like in my own life. Like if someone says something like, oh, you look awful, you look terrible, whatever. And if you're sick, that's something I like to say in my own life.
Wait, you say the same thing, like, oh, I'm glad it's not just my little secret or something. Potter is telling them, okay, we got to get the post op, and Pearson Honeycutt aren't back yet. Mulcahy's doing a solo. Margaret, of course, is ready to get to work because she's Margaret. I love that she's instantly bossing him around, where she's like, "You need to rest," and he's like, "Well, not yet, Major." And she's like, "Colonel, I insist."
Oh God. Oh yeah. Yeah, that part, like what I love about that part though, are you talking about when they're still at the Jeep or when he comes? Okay. 'Cause I love the part when he comes in to see her, and then she's all like, "Oh, you really should be in bed," and he's just like, "Oh, I'm fine." Like he's like, "I don't want to waste all my energy talking about how I should be in bed. Let me get to what I have to do." I love that so much.
I love their dynamic. I just love
Oh, yeah.
that she just feels completely comfortable bossing him around, even though he's the colonel. I love that. And then, of course, Winchester says, I'll help just as soon as we've taken a little time to freshen up. And Potter goes, fine, Winchester, you do that, and I'll have room service send you over a nice turkey sandwich.
Oh yeah. I just love his delivery of that too. Like Potter's so he's so convincing in his like and when he's sick or when he's drunk and I love his acting.
He's got a great "I'm about to throw up" kind of voice because it's like, "We'll send you over a nice turkey sandwich." Like he says, like he's kind of like swallowing the words a little.
Yeah.
It makes turkey sandwich. Well, I mean, I'm not that doesn't appeal to me anyway. But it makes turkey sandwich sound disgusting because he's
Oh
saying it
yeah.
in a kind of throw uppy way. So, I do. I like that he said, and it's a very Pottery way of telling Winchester, get your ass in gear. It's not, he doesn't order him. He just says, fine, I'll send you a turkey. See, which is the code for, no, you're going to do this right
No,
now.
you're right, because he knows that Winchester, if he gives him an order, he knows that Winchester's going to keep barking and coming up with excuses. But he knows that if he just tells him, like, hey, you're going to be wearing my dinner soon if you don't get up and get moving. Like,
So then we're in post op and we see Mulcahy is running around helping everybody out. Klinger comes out of his office and he's carrying like a little ceramic container, which clearly he is using to throw up to get sick in. And I noticed that he's wearing his pink dressing gown. And
yep.
it's so interesting that Klinger has incorporated women's clothes as part of his normal outfits, even though he is now past the point where he is dressing this way to get out of, to get his Section 8. And
Yeah, that's
it's
true.
very interesting that the camp has internalized all this. This is just what Klinger does. It's not remotely unusual or worth commenting on. It's just something Klinger now is just comfortable in some instances still wearing women's clothes. I just find that a really interesting detail.
It's very interesting, even in the sense of, let's say he was even still like heavy in the cross dressing. The fact that he cross dresses when he's sick really shows like how devoted he is, right? Because when you're sick, it's like I don't even care what I'm wearing. I'm just reaching for something. Like I'm not going out of my way to, whatever. So it's like that also kind of plays into that too, right? Where it's like, oh, it's interesting that even when he's sick, he's doing it. Regardless of,
I mean, I'm sure he's got his fatigues to wear, but he chooses to wear this pink fuzzy thing, which is really funny. So he says, "Is it safe for me to come in here?" And then we see a bedpan come flying into camera frame under the door. So clearly not. Then Winchester and Margaret arrive just to see one of the nurses get up and run out because she's about to throw up. And of course, Mulcahy is finding all of this, as he says, quite exhilarating because as we've seen in previous episodes, he wants to feel needed, especially kind of on the medical side of things. And here this is exactly the kind of work that Mulcahy can do, right? This is nothing, complex. There's no medicine that needs to be administered or prescribed. It's just a matter of tending to people and, cleaning out things. And he's just being super upbeat and real cheery, right? And that's not, it's fun. It's fun to see him just kind of like looking so energized, and he has like his he doesn't have his coat on, so he just has like his black shirt. He's just kind of like, oh, okay, all right, it's great. And of course, Winchester says, "All right, well, this looks like you've got everything under control, Margaret. I'm gonna go out and get a quick shower." And she's like, "You step 1 foot outside that door, Buster, and you'll need a doctor." And I love that Margaret can order people around by her sheer force of personality, because Winchester doesn't have to listen to her, but he does because she's got moral authority, and she's also kind of terrifying. And I love that it's Margaret is Margaret, and you're going to listen to her, and that's the end of it. Even someone as strong-willed as Winchester.
She always. I mean, the touching the nose, like all those things, like she knows how to get to them too, right? But to go on what you were saying about Mulcahy, I wonder if they were, when they were writing it or when they were even doing some of the scenes where, I wonder if maybe he didn't have as much of a role and then he was like, maybe even like inputted, like, hey, maybe this would be a good opportunity for my character. Like, I wonder if there was any of that, but. It kind of reminds me of when he was washing the windows with like Hawkeye. Like
Yes.
he always loved to be like very useful, right? Like you were saying.
Yeah. I mean, it said he when a guy like him, who's in, as they say in another episode, this is war and you're in the peace business. And obviously, like I said, because he's not medically trained, he can't do anything really heavy, but he can do this stuff. And now he's got a whole camp full of people that need help. So you can see, and he's got a stern spine, even though he seems very gentle and friendly. So again, I like this whole, and it's a nice change of pace that it's like, Winchester doesn't want to deal with it, and everyone else is second hand. Here he is, kind of being super chipper and everything. So Margaret and Winchester get into a big fight because, of course, he looks at it as like all the work that needs to be done is nursing, cleaning bedpans and cleaning sheets and emptying bedpans. And of course, he just feels like he is more than above doing all that. And of course, he is not. Then we're back to Hawkeye and BJ, and Ralph's following them around. They stop at this kind of little clump of shrubs, and they sit down with Ralph. And I like that when they stop, and Hawkeye says, "Now, Beej, we're going to sit down. Try not to get lost on the way down."
Such a jerk.
I mean, I'd be mad though, right? I mean, you
Yeah.
did get us lost in war-torn Korea. I'd be kind of, I would be mad.
No,
So
it's true. To be
they,
fair.
yeah. So they try and talk to Ralph, and they make a little map using scratches in the dirt, trying to explain, "Here, we're here, and we want to go here." And they think that Ralph is following along, and all he does is just sort of step over this line that they made, and they realize he doesn't understand at all what they're talking about. Then all of a sudden, he pulls his rifle on them, and they're a little like, "What the hell is going on here?" And they see that further up, coming down the road, are three more Chinese soldiers. The lead one is played by actor Brian Chung, who has done seven, would go on to do seven MASH episodes. This is his fifth of seven,
Yeah,
but he would.
he's the prisoner that goes away in the suit, right?
Yes, in the 11th season. Yes. Yeah. He was, he again, another actor that was used over and over again by MASH. And we see that, actually it's four. I said three. There's four of them. And they start talking to Ralph. And we see that, of course, Hawkeye and BJ are trying to act as sort of benign as possible. And the four of them actually draw their rifles, which, you know, I would, that would be about as terrifying as you could imagine, thinking you're that close to what's going to happen. And then Ralph starts kind of jumping up and down. And then he does this great little bit of acting where he kind of like scratches the back of his head and kind of bows his head down, like he's doing like an aw shucks kind of thing. And we don't know what's going on here. And we see that the four soldiers kind of nod their head and walk away. And they realize that Ralph basically bullshitted these guys into saying, no, 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 these are my prisoners. I'm going to take them with me. And as soon as they got out of eyeshot, he tries to do a wink, which he doesn't know how to do. So he just like his face just sort of contorts in this weird thing. And Hawkeye and BJ figure out that, yeah, Ralph just saved their life by lying to those guys and keeping them from getting shot, which is amazing.
Yeah. And I love how you can almost tell what they're saying too. Like you can kind of tell that he's saying like, oh, I'm going to take these guys. And he's either telling them something sick, like, I'm going to take these guys and murder them myself or whatever. or he's saying, I'm bringing them in and I'm going to get all the glory for getting these two guys. Right. So, but I love how you can kind of tell that that's basically what he's saying.
Yep. Yeah.
And I love the Hawkeye line where he's like, remember only your name, rank and serial number. And if they ask nicely, MacArthur's home address.
Yeah. I mean, you know, someone's pointing a rifle at you, whatever info they want, you know, I mean, that's fine. Yeah. I don't care. I mean, that reminds me back when I worked at a video store, and I worked there long enough that I became assistant manager, and they gave me the drill, and they, you know, about here's the keys to the this and the that. And then they said, now we're going to tell you what the standard operating procedure is if someone comes in and tries to rob the place.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, I already know what that is. That is, I give them all the money in the register and a free membership. Like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm not getting shot working at the video store.
Like, I worked overnight at a gas station, so I can totally vouch for that.
Oh, that's, do you ever have any trouble like that?
Not like legit trouble, but I had, to be honest, I did have a guy come in. It was like 6:30 in the morning. It's starting to get light out. There's people pumping gas. I think there might have been someone like in the store looking around, getting something. And the guy literally said like, hey, if I ask you for the money, do you have to give it to me?
Oh, shit.
And I'm like, I don't know. Maybe make it convincing. Like,
or else wow. It's gonna look like
you're going to make it look like you're a friend of mine if you're just like asking me for it. But
what did he do? What did he do after that?
I think it was more or less just a joke, like just kind of turned out and walked out. But
wow, that's a good, that was a very quick on your feet answer, man. Like you're kind of taking it seriously, but sort of not. That was pretty good.
Yeah, it's like, wow. Well, you might want to like pretend you have a weapon or something. Like, I don't know.
Wow. You were more nonchalant in that situation than I would have been. My goodness. So
I got more people coming in saying like, oh, my car's down the road. I need a jerry can full of gas, or I need $50 or whatever. I had more of that than anything.
Okay. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I think, right. I agree. I think it's, again, I like the way Soon-Teko kind of sort of sheepish with them. I get the sense that if he had said, I'm going to shoot them, they would have been like, well, we'll just shoot them right now. What's the difference? I think he probably was like, yeah, hey, I could get, my commander would really love it if I bring these two guys in. So let me do it. I think he was, you know, like that kind of thing. So they walk off and they give him, as I say, a great big hug because they realize that he has lied to save their life. So then we're back at the 477th, and Mulcahy and Winchester are doing laundry. When Mulcahy could not be enjoying it more. He's whistling. Yeah. He's singing songs. Meanwhile, Winchester looks absolutely miserable. He has a great line. He says, "This close to China, and I am doing laundry," which is not the most culturally sensitive joke in the world, but it's something Winchester, something Winchester would say. And we see, I love that Mulcahy, like, he's doing one part of it and Winchester's doing the other. And, like, he's taking the sheets out of the water and he's splashing it down into Winchester's little tub and the water is shooting up. And it just, Mulcahy's just having a time of his life and Winchester's miserable. Like, he just could hate himself. And then, of course, it makes it even worse by Margaret comes in and she goes, "I want these white, not battleship gray."
the look Winchester is giving Father Mulcahy, like, you watch that scene again and just look at his face the whole time. It's so good.
He loves it. He's just really enjoying himself. So then Margaret is, so he tries to beg off from doing the laundry, and Margaret is like, "Fine, there's bedpans you can do." And he's like, "Bedpans?" And then at one point he says, "You're not in charge here, bimbo." Which is kind of a nasty thing to say to Margaret. Like, when the going gets tough, Winchester gets kind of mean.
Yeah.
So, and they start fighting, and Winchester, excuse me, Mulcahy breaks it up, and Margaret is like, "I'm up to my epaulets and sick people," and he whines about doing a little laundry. And again, they're going, and then he says, "I'm trying to remember that you are a woman and a fellow officer." And of course she says, "Don't patronize me, skinhead." So she gets equally petty as well. It's just, they're like children, these two, right? They just immediately got each other's nerves and they both go for the jugular in their own respective ways.
It's just immediate. Like, yeah. There's just some people that are like that, right?
Yep. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Some people you just can't have a fight with because it just gets nasty immediately. And okay, he breaks it up because he's, come on, everyone has to pitch in here. And Margaret's like, "Okay, which is it, bedpans or laundry?" And he starts singing the Scrub Our Sheets song because he realizes, of course. Well, what would you, if in that situation, I think most people would want to do the laundry. I think the bedpan stuff would be kind of rough, right? It's probably easier, but yeah.
Yeah, I'd rather be doing the sheets too.
Hawkeye and BJ and Ralph find this wounded older man laying there in the dirt with his ox cart, who they name Fred. That is played by an actor named Bob Okazaki, born in 1902, passed away in 1985. This was his second and last MASH. He was in the Rally Round the Flag Boys episode from last season. Yeah, from last season.
Wow.
Yep. And we see that they're like, "Well, nothing seems to be broken, but obviously he can't walk on it." And they're deciding, well, who's going to carry this guy? And then Hawkeye says, "Well, simple. I figure he'll be carried by those who got us lost and walking."
Yeah. Again, fair.
I love that he's not letting BJ forget this. that's really great. So then I like it when those two are, I don't like it when they're genuinely fighting, but I like it when they're making fun of each other because we know they love each other so much. Yeah. They're bicker. And that always is very, very charming to me.
And they, I mean, they're tent mates, right? So like, there's going to be that, right? They're like brothers, right? So
yeah, it's not nasty. It's in good. And of course, BJ doesn't argue. He picks up Fred and off they go. So now we're back in the 477, and Margaret is carrying laundry, and she sees that Winchester is taking a nap. And I love the fact that she doesn't even take the time to open the door to the swamp. She just rips the canvas down.
Hurricane Margaret, right?
Like, it would take just as long to do that then to open the door, but that doesn't make the point that she's trying to make, which is, "I've literally ripped the wall down of your tent," and wakes Winchester up, and he says, "Oh, I was making the bed," and then he's like, "I slipped down, and I know it looks like that I was napping, but I'm working," and he's like, "I'm looking for sick people," and he looks under the cot, "Anyone here need a doctor?" And she screams, "How dare you? How dare you sleep while this whole camp is in bed?" Now, right after that, there's a weird moment where Winchester starts talking and he says something to the effect, he starts saying a sentence And the scene cuts in the middle of him talking. And it's a very strange edit. You wouldn't normally edit that to where it would cut in the middle of, but he literally, it just cuts. And I don't know whether
That's
they just,
weird.
yeah, I don't, I never noticed it until I was watching it for the purposes of watching this episode for the purposes of this one, is that he starts saying something and they just cut. And I think that's just a mistake. I think they didn't mean to, they either meant to cut it before he started talking or when he finished his line, but
Wow.
he says like three
I'm
words and
gonna
then it just
rewatch that
cuts.
part.
Yeah.
I wanna rewatch that just to see, 'cause
Yeah.
wow.
It's very odd. It's not in the subtitles because I watch it with the subtitles on just in case I miss anything. But like you listen to it and you hear him start to say something back to Margaret, and then they just it's, and then we cut to back to Hawkeye and BJ carrying Fred, and they find his hut. We meet Fred's wife, who is not credited in the episode. We hear her say something, but she doesn't get any credit on IMDb or anything like that. Mrs. Fred,
Wow.
as they say. So yeah, I don't know why she doesn't get credit. And they happen to have a motorcycle, and as we know, BJ loves motorcycles. We'd be established in later episodes, other episodes. The man enjoys a good motorcycle, and I love that when he sees the motorcycle, he puts his hand on the like the brace of the little hut, and he's kind of got this real cocky,
Oh
he's sort of like, "Hey, Hawkeye, we're
yeah.
fine." I'm gonna like he's kind of like in his
Dude,
element.
I love the line. We have no problem. We have one
Yeah, when they
problem.
look in the gas tank, yeah, he says, "You're looking at Spokes Honeycutt, Mill Valley's finest surviving motorcycle rider." And then he says, "Yeah, we got no problem. We got one problem, and there's absolutely no gas in there." And then they have a jug. Fred hands them a jug, and Hawkeye's got a great line where he takes a whiff of it, and he goes, "You want to take a slug of this before you waste it all in there?" Which is that's a
There's a
great
good
line.
one.
We see BJ pour the gas. Now it's just a prop. I'm not gonna get too bogged down, but BJ pours maybe 1 ounce of liquid in there. Like that is not enough
Oh, yeah.
gas to get them to the 407th. I'm
That's
sorry.
amazing.
That bike is going to carry three people, a sidecar and two people, and all their crap they're carrying. They're gonna get about 100 feet on the gas that he poured into there, but okay, it's fine. We don't want to take 2 minutes to have him fill up the motorcycle. And they initially are going to drive away without Ralph. And of course, he starts yelling, not yelling, but like raising his hand. And he's, and then they realize, oh, he wants to come with us. And then Hawkeye says, would Bob Hope and Bing Crosby leave without Dorothy L'Amour? And they ask him to hop on. Now, that's one of those jokes that as a kid, I didn't get, right? I knew who Bob Hope was, and I knew who Bing
Yeah.
Crosby was, but I didn't know. I'm sure I didn't know who Dorothy L'Amour was, and I didn't know about the Road movies. But it's when you watch the show as a kid, a lot of kids are really good at like they don't understand something, they either ask or they let it just wash over them, And I just
Yeah.
kind of was like, okay, I don't know what that joke means. Were you the same way? Were you getting there had to be references in the show where you were like, I don't know what that means, but it's fine. Let's just move on.
Yeah, some of them, like you said, you just let them wash over you. When I kind of tell people about the show, like talking about how there's a lot of like Marx Brothers reference and stuff, like that people who don't really know Groucho Marx and whatnot, that they're not really gonna get some of the stuff. But I always say, like, through context, a lot of the time you can kind of get what they're trying to say with said joke. Like the episode, I think it's out of, yeah, it's out of sight, out of mind, or just out of sight. The
The
one where
one
Hawkeye goes
where,
blind
yeah.
and he's feeling around on a cot and he goes, oh, Claude Rains.
Right.
I didn't know what that meant, but I knew what it meant at the same time. Like, I knew that it was either the Invisible Man or a ghost or whatever, right? But so, like, that's one reference where it's like, yeah, I could see through the context of what's going on. But yeah, there's a lot that go over your head if you don't know, right?
Yeah. I mean, by 1979, audiences were most audiences would still have known. Bob Hope was still active, for Pete's sake. He was still doing television specials. Bing Crosby had died at that point, but the road movies had some sort of lasting fame and they played on television endlessly and stuff like that. But yeah, it was just one of those where I just kind of went, all right, okay, let's just move on. So then we're back to the 477th, and this scene, this whole scene with Potter and Margaret, which you referred to earlier, where he's like, I don't want to waste time fighting about whether I should be in bed or not. This was all cut in syndication for the one that I saw. I never saw this scene until I got the DVDs. They just cut this entire, as I mentioned many, many times, sometimes the local editor would trim multiple scenes by a few seconds to get the show down, or they would lop an entire scene out whole cloth. And this one, they lopped the entire scene out. Cause I never saw this until I got the later DVDs. And, you know, she's arguing with Potter, and, you know, he's like, maybe we could take a break while I watch over the place a bit. And then she's like, you can check Igor for me. And they have this whole thing about Winchester. By the way, in the middle of the two of them, you see Nurse Kelly in the background, and her hair is all frazzled. She looks really sick. And then we get to the point where he sits down to talk to Igor. And that's when I saw the syndicated version. That's where it comes back in, where he's walking in and he's sitting down and he's talking to Jeff Maxwell as Igor. And Igor starts talking about that he feels like being on a boat that goes up and down, up and down. And that leads Potter to start feeling sick. And he has this great voice where he's like, Private? And he's like, yes, sir. And then he's like, move over. Like, he has the most, it's the deepest voice I've ever heard Harry Morgan.
Oh, I love that part. Private, move over.
Move over. So then Hawkeye and BJ show up on their motorcycle, and we can see that it is actually Mike Farrell riding the motorcycle, and we can see that that is Soon-Tek-O in the back. We don't really see Alan Alda's face, so I wonder if that's a stunt double that they put in for somebody else, just in case. You don't risk the star doing any sort of stunt if you don't have to. Now, BJ is not a great motorcycle driver. He's not. Hawkeye has every right to be, yeah, he has every right to be skeptical, because BJ should have enough control over the motorcycle to not drive it straight into the laundry, but he does. So yeah, if I was Hawkeye, I'd be like, yeah, BJ, I don't think you really know what you're doing.
Do you think that was purely accidental?
Yes, I do.
He sees Winchester there, right? So
I don't think BJ would purposely run over, because he knows the laundry is, you know, yeah, it's for something. So, but yeah, I didn't. BJ's just not, you know, he loves his motorcycles, but he's not great at it. I mean, good Lord, in the very last shot of BJ in the entire series is him going down the hill, and he looks like he's about to take a header on the motorcycle. So it's not great. Plus, he's not wearing a helmet, for Pete's sakes. So they're talking to Winchester's pissed at them, and they're like, your laundry. He's like, you ruined my laundry. And they're like, your laundry. Yeah. And then, he notices, he says, that man is North Korean. And Hawkeye says, right, Charles, he came here to pick up his laundry. Good thing it was ready, or he'd have shot you. And then
North Korean.
Yeah.
Good observation.
And then Margaret and Potter come out. And I love that it's like a line that goes by, because it's a little under the breath because everyone else is talking. But you hear Hawkeye say, Margaret, did you miss me? Which.
Thank God.
And then Potter's like, what'd you two do? Take a stop at the beach? And then they're all complaining. And then Mulcahy's like, I don't know what all the fuss was about. I thought it was a piece of cake. And they grab the medicine and take off. And then they get up and they start walking into post op, and they realize that Ralph is following behind them, and they're like, oh, Ralph, come on. There's an entire ward full of people that you haven't surrendered to yet. And he follows them in, and he's all happy and stuff like that. And that's the end of our, the main part of our episode.
Yeah. I love that. I love the line, shame on you, Charles. You don't know the international symbol for touchdown?
He is, I mean, he does have this big rifle strapped to his back, and if you're in a medical unit, that's a little off-putting, but clearly Ralph is no threat.
No.
So then we come back, and Klinger, who is still sick, barely has enough strength to climb on the, he's clearly climbed, not, excuse me, crawled across the floor, and he crawls up on the desk, and he puts in a call to Sparky, and he says, "Can you please get me to the HQ supply?" And he calls Thermopolis, and he says, "Thermopolis, this is Klinger. You know those turkeys that you sent us?" And he yells, "Stuff it," which is an old-timey joke. And then obviously Thermopolis says something quite shocking back, and then we are treated to the biggest take Jamie Farr probably is ever going to do on MASH. Like, it's at like a 13. If it on a 1 to 10 scale, it's like a 13. It is like, it's
Yeah.
about as cartoony as it gets. And that's the end of our episode. So,
One of the best, like freeze frame too. Like it always ended on the freeze frame, and that's one of the best ones.
yeah, with him with his mouth
For
open
sure.
and stuff. Yeah, his eyes are big. Like, Charles S. Dubin must have directed Jamie Farr to be like, bigger, bigger, bigger. You know, like we want to make this as, the biggest take as humanly possible. And so that's the end of The Yellow Brick Road, as I mentioned, and written by Mike Farrell. I liked it. I liked it a bit. I liked it quite a bit in that it's got an A and a B plot, but they are connected, right? Loosely, but they are connected in that it's like, oh, the whole camp is sick. They need the doctors, but the doctors have been are lost, which is why it's taking them so long. I like that they blend together, and then of course they pair up at the very end. But I like that they are connected somewhat, and it's funny. There's a lot of funny lines. It's got some good action kind of beats to it. It's got them out having a sort of a road adventure, kind of the Crosby Hope thing. So overall, I think Yellow Brick Road is really fun, and I said, well done, Mike Farrell.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, for him to not really have like any writing chops like before that is it's pretty crazy. And I thought it was also crazy that Harry Morgan hadn't written one. Like, I guess he only directed, right?
I think he does write one around in like the 11th season. I think he's got a writer's credit. I know he's got a couple, he's directed a few by now, and he'll direct
Yeah.
a few more. I think I should know this off the top of my head. I think he has at least one writing credit later on, but I'll have to double check. And Mike Farrell would go on to write another episode this season. So he was obviously sort of feeling his oats here, but, I think Harry Morgan had not yet written written an episode. So again, good job, Mike Farrell. So, do you have a favorite line or joke from this episode?
We've said all of my favorite lines already, but one that I had written down that you kind of reworded it, but I love when Rizzo says, "Can I make a confession? I murdered someone tomorrow." I love the delivery of that.
Tamara. Yeah, he's like, can I get pre-confession for that? Yeah, because right, he hates Klinger so much. My favorite joke is when Hawkeye is drawing the map on the ground to Ralph, describing him and BJ, and BJ goes, "I'm the tall one," which
Yeah.
I just thought that was funny. So, yeah, it's a solid episode, as you say. It's certainly light. There's no serious medical thing to worry about. Everybody's got salmonella, but it's not that big of a deal. So, it's just kind of a fun romp episode, and you need to have them every so often. So, overall, I like Yellow Brick Road quite a bit. So, Tom, thank you so much for coming on and doing this, and for sharing your MASH origin story with me.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to have joined you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Again, thank you for being a fan of the show. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Of course, you can find all the back episodes of MASHcast on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can find me over on Blue Sky under Rob Kelly Creative. And finally, if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. There you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big salute to Dennis Bailey, Daryl Clark, James K, Michael Kelly, David Mann, Matt McLean, Lisa P, Brady Palmer, Joe Perino, Stan Peel, Michael Porter, Nicholas Prom, Adam Sanders, Stefan Venchelik, Rich Ram, Billy Shulman, and Mike Thomas. I really do appreciate the support, everybody. And so we will be back next week. But until then, that is all.
Majors, thank goodness you're back. Pleasure to see someone who isn't squatting, doubled up, or lying down.
Colonel, what's wrong? You look awful.
I'm glad you noticed. I'd hate to feel this rotten and have it just be my little secret.